Thanks for being here this morning for a very important panel that will pick up where we left off last evening. We have a star-studded group of conservative wise men here to lead the discussion and help us understand what should conservatism conserve and what should it not. To chair the panel, we have Neil Freeman, who's chairman of the Blackwell Corporation, an advisory firm with clients in the communications, defense, and wealth management industries. He's chairman of Foundation Management Institute, a partner in PL Media, and he's director emeritus of Maine Heritage Policy Center, former trustee of the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, where I was had the pleasure of serving with him, board of directors of the Fund for American Studies, and for 38 years, he was a director of National Review. He served on numerous corporate and nonprofit boards. He's had a wonderful career as a TV producer where he won many international awards as well as the Peabody and the Emmy. He began his career in publishing working for the Hearst Corporation and Doubleday. So he's had various careers and has lived numerous lifetimes. So what better person to lead this important debate than my friend Neil Freeman?
We are all indebted to Chris and to ISI for reissuing the 1964 book, What is Conservatism? This was a quickie campaign book put out during the presidential campaign to answer the question Barry Goldwater was then posing to the nation. What is conservatism? This little book thrown together by me and a few other overworked, underpaid National Review staffers, implausibly became a masterwork, the best single treatment of fusionism, the most direct, most accessible, the most durable. It was the brainchild of National Review's inner circle. Frank Meyer, Wilmore Kendall, Brent Bozell. You will note, I hope you all have a copy of this. If you don't, beg ISI for one. They'll probably give you one for free. Meyer and Kendall are both represented in this collection with central essays. Bozell is absent, called to campaign duty as a congressional candidate that season. As it happened, I managed his campaign to a brilliant second place finish. Bozell, to Frank Meyer, I must say, who was a brilliant, almost polymathic man, all Catholics looked alike. So when Brent proved to be unavailable, Frank included Gary Wills, whose essay provides the only discordant note in this book. By 1964, Gary was already in transit from Orthodox conservatism to wherever it was that he went. I was in the outer circle at National Review, which is to say I did not get a daily phone call from Frank Meyer. Over the course of the 1960s, I received only 1,000 phone calls from Frank Meyer. There was the regular weekly phone call, the update, and there was the almost as regular emergency phone call. Emergencies tended to follow Frank around. Every one of those phone calls came in after midnight Eastern time and before 6 a.m. If you're a young parent getting kids ready for school, going off to work, this was not easy. And it was, of course, to solve the Frank Meyer problem that AT&T invented caller ID. Frank's own politics, as most of you know, were libertarian, almost always expressed in the absolutist mode. But he was not a man of contemplation. He was a man of action, a man of the arena. His ambition was to fashion a philosophy that was both internally coherent and broadly appealing. philosophy upon which he could build a governing coalition and seek political power. This little book reflects the full range of Frank's coalition building skills. He managed to balance arguments between Russell Kirk and Friedrich Hayek, between Frank Chodorov and Stephen Tonsor, and so on to the end of an imposing lineup featuring in the cleanup spot a young slugger named William F. Buckley, Jr. Frank found ingenious ways, some of them intellectually tenuous, some of them rhetorically gossamer, to balance these competing claims of freedom, tradition, and virtue. Each strain of conservatism was persuaded by Frank to see more gain than loss in associating with him and his cause. Meyer, the libertarian, began by recruiting Kendall, the majoritarian, and Bozell, the traditionalist. Frank disagreed with both of them, as they did with each other. Their disagreements were joined frequently and loudly. But these three men, all of them committed to changing the course of a nation, became the fathers of modern political conservatism. Those of you concerned with the polarized politics of our day, a raucous civic discourse, can perhaps take hope from the fact that our movement was a collaboration of three of the 20th century's most unclubbable men. Remarkable personalities could not get along with anybody but with each other on a tactical basis made a movement. Frank, as I indicated, was a public intellectual, which is to say that he sought not only to refine the timeless principles of our philosophy, but to develop their practical applications. His proximate goal, openly acknowledged, was to capture a major political party. He succeeded. For more than a half century, the Republican Party nominated either a Frank Meyer fusionist, Goldwater Reagan, or somebody who pretended to be Bush, Romney, and the rest. In 2016, for the first time in 56 years, fusionism went unrepresented on a national election. It seemed to have become a spent force. At the least, it seemed to be a marginalized force with a manifest need for retooling. And thus the question for this morning, for as Chris put it, the wise men. Demographically, that's a special category, wise men. What should conservatism conserve and what not? To address this question, we have invited speakers who combined have been thinking about it for 150 years. Don Devine of the Fund for American Studies has, over the course of his career, moved from academia to politics to government service to policy. In doing so, he's almost managed to make DC's revolving door look good. Lee Edwards of the Heritage Foundation is the preeminent historian of the conservative movement, the author of a shelf full of books on the American right. If Lee hasn't written about it, it didn't really happen. Dr. Edwards, who is unavoidably absent this morning, has asked Matt Spaulding to deliver his remarks. Daniel Oliver of the Education and Research Institute has produced over the past half century more thoughtful commentary on the American political scene than anybody, with the possible exceptions of his colleagues on this platform. We begin with brief statements from our speakers, after which I may have a few questions, after which they may have a few questions for each other, after which Boss Ely assures me you will have questions for us all. We begin with Dan Oliver.